Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Samach Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 8 lines from the top of Daf Samach Ches. You'll notice immediately a crown marking, a crown shape around Rav Achor ben Yankiv. This is a marking scheme that we started in our previous shiur, and Rav Achor comes to present another source teaching us that there is no tfisas kiddushin. A marital bond does not take hold when by chiyuve kores, by forbidden relations that are punishable by kores. The previous crown shape presented the source at the bottom of Samach Zayin Amud Beis, and it had been the hekish of all other arayas to Achos Isha. And in the case of Achos Isha, a wife's sister, the Pasuk uses the term lo sikach, that there shall be no likuchin, there shall be no bonding. Literally, there's no taking. In other words, there's no marital bond. Here we go with the second approach, with the next approach of Achor Bayankiv Omar. We continue in the Gemara. Asya bekal v'chomer miyavoma. The case of no tfisas kiddushin by the other arayas, by the other forbidden relations in the Torah, is learned or derived from the case of Yavama. Yavama means a woman who's waiting to marry the Yavam. She is prohibited to marrying an outsider. That's called Yavama Lashuk. The Shuk being the marketplace, but a reference to other men. Uma Yavama Shehi Balav. Mind you, the Isur of Yavama, if an outsider marries a Yavama, there is a sin to the tune of a lav. It's not punishable by Koris. We consider it a lower level offense. And yet, lo tafsi bo kiddushin, there is no tfisas kiddushin. The Rashi quotes the posuk concerning the yavama. It says lo siya eishes hameis hachutza, and the lo siya expression means there is no havaya, there is no taking hold of a marital bond with an outsider until she has received chalitza, until she's been released from the yibum bond, the zika that is referred to elsewhere, the connection, the bond. So a Yavama Lashuk is punishable only as a negative command, to lav, no kores, and yet lo tafsi bo kiddushin, chayve krisus, the chayve, again, chayve misois, the chayve krisus lo kol shekein. Chayve misois means those kinds of offenses, of immoral relations that are punishable by execution at the hands of the court, or chayiv kores. All the more so, we will tell you that there's no tfisas kiddushin. The Gemara asks, "I hachi shar chayve lavinami." If that's the case, why not learn all other negative commands, other relationships that are prohibited by a negative command, similar to Yavama Lashuk, and say that there is no tfisas kiddushin? And we don't say that. The result would be, imagine a Kohen would marry a Grusha, a divorcee. He is prohibited in marrying a divorcee, but if he does, there is a marital bond form. So why don't we learn from the case of Yavama Lashuk and say that there is no bond that's formed? The Gemara answers. You'll notice we have a long answer marking. Omar of Papa. Chayve Lavin Behedyo Ksiv Behu. Regarding Chayve Lavin, the Torah says explicitly that there is Tfisas Kiddushin. The Pasuk says, Ki Sieno Leish Shtei Noshim, Hoachas Ahuva V'achas Hasnua. That's the Pasuk. Now, the literal translation of the Pasuk would be, and we have to add a little information that you can see in Rashi, is that if a man has two wives, one Ahuv, one he loves and one he doesn't love. Now, this pasuk is in the context of the laws of inheritance. And in the case of laws of inheritance, the Torah tells us that a firstborn gets a double portion, double any other one of his sons. Now, he may have several children from these two wives. And now, the Gemara continues looking at this pasuk. We already gave you the context of the pasuk, and we gave you also the simple reading of the pasuk. But the simple reading of the pasuk just doesn't make sense. V'chi yesh snua lifnei hamokom v'ahuva lifnei hamokom. If you're going to explain the pasuk like we did, that the man happened to love one wife more than the other, does that make any difference to the Almighty and how he defines the laws of inheritance, that the man's firstborn should get a double portion? The pasuk goes on to say that you shall not make a distinction between the ahuva and the snua. But that would be kind of obvious. God is not going to make a distinction between between the different children based on which woman the husband loves more. So we have to go back to the drawing board and say that the terms ahuva and snua are not a reference to the man's level of affinity toward the different wives that he has. Elo ahuva means ahuva benisueha. Snua means snua benisueha. That she is, ahuva means loved, or her marriage. Nisua means her marriage. Her marriage is desirable. Her marriage is acceptable. Snua means a marriage that's unacceptable. That would mean a marriage that, in order to achieve it, a negative command was violated. And the Torah nevertheless says that even if there's a marriage that's snua, that's undesirable in terms of the law, nevertheless the marital bond takes hold. And in that context, the Torah is saying that a man might have had two wives produce different sets of children, even though one of the wives was a marriage that was a violation of a negative command. Nevertheless, the firstborn to the man will get a double portion, even if the firstborn happens to come from the snua, from the type of marriage that was a violation of law. But we repeat the main point. The main point is that from this pasuk, we see that siena, the word siena means, it's the verb form of to be, but it means in our context a marriage bond takes hold, even if the wife happens to be a wife forbidden to him by virtue of a negative command. You'll notice that we have a bracketed section, a rather long bracketed section. There's a note on the side, the starred note, says, Achrei HaSugrayim, after the bracketed section, HaGemara Mamshichoim Shitas HaChachomim, the Gemara continues with the opinion of the Chachomim, focusing on the Chachomim. B'soch HaSugrayim, Yesh Diyun Lefi Rabbi Akiva. Within the bracketed section, the Gemara focuses in on Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva has a totally different approach to marital bonds and their ability or lack thereof to form when you're dealing with a mere negative command violation. So, that having been said, the reference to the Rabbonin after the bracketed section is really coming on the heels of Rabbi Akiva that appears in the bracketed section. So, that having been said, just that we gave you a feeling of the structure, that the section within the brackets is a focus on Rabbi Akiva. We'll continue with the bracketed section, but noting that afterwards then we'll have the Rabbonin response to that. In the meantime, though, we have a source for no Tfisas Kiddushin by other Arayas, that was derived through a Kavuchomer from Yevama Lashuk. As far as other Chayvei Lavim are concerned, they are not learned from Yevama Lashuk because there's an additional pasuk of Kisyen Leish. Now, the bracketed section. On the side of the Gemara under our Nosei, our topic heading, we note that Shitas Rabbi Kiva, the Ein Kiddushin Tovsin B'Chayvei Lavim, Rabbi Kiva has an opinion that's in disagreement with what we have said. He holds that there is no tfisas kiddushin with chayvei lavin. As we go on in the Gemara, if things appear to be familiar to some of you, realize this is a piece of Gemara that appears several times in the Shas. Ula Rabbi Kiva, Diomar. We're reading, you see in the bracketed section, Ula Rabbi Kiva Diomar, Ein Kiddushin Toivsin B'chayvei Lavin. He holds that there's no bonding when the marriage is a negative command that's violated. Ki Sieno B'mai Moikim. How does he establish, how does Rabbi Kiva deal with the Pasuk of Ki Sieno Lish, where the Pasuk seemed to indicate that there is a bonding in the case of a negative command? The Gemara answers, even Rabbi Kiva has an exception. The Almona LeKohen Gadol, it's the case of a Kohen Gadol, a high priest that married a forbidden woman to him, which is the case of a widow, a high priest. A Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry an Almona. And if he does, so we are telling you here that according to Reb Simoy, there is a bond that is formed. We said, the Almona LeKohen Gadol, Uch Reb Simoy, Desanya. We have to note, I want to emphasize that we're dealing within the umbrella of Rabbi Akiva. So the Brisa says, Rabbi Simoy Oimer, Mina Kol Hoya Rabbi Akiva Yisem Mamzer. From all forbidden marriages, including negative commands, Rabbi Akiva declares the child born is a Mamzer, is illegitimate. Chutz Me'almonu Kohen Gadol, with the exception of that type of marriage, a widow to a high priest, Sharei Omro Torah, there the Torah says, Lo Yichalel. Chilulin oise v'ein oise mamzerus. The child that results from Almona L'Kohen Gadol is a Cholol. A Cholol is a child, though his father is a priest, in fact the high priest, he is a Cholol. He does not have the status of a Kohen. And we infer that that marriage results in Chilulim, but it does not create mamzerus. By the fact that there's no mamzerus, by the fact that the child born is not called a mamzer, we realize that there was a marital bond. Otherwise, as far as Rabbi Akiva is concerned, where there's no marital bond, the child becomes a mamzer. We continue. So far, we revealed a case that we can ascribe to the pasuk of Lo Siena Achas, and one of them said Achas Asnua. That's the Almona L'Kohen Gadol case. However, there's another opinion on the matter when we deal with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva has, we'll say, these other Tanoim that are, we'll say, commentaries on Rabbi Akiva or critiques of Rabbi Akiva. Well, the Rabbi Yeshiva of the Omar Bo Nitzaveh Al Akiva Min Yosef. Come, let us come and scream in protest against Rabbi Akiva, who is called Akiva ben Yosef. Shoy Oimer, he, Rabbi Akiva says, Kol she'ein lo bio b'Yisrael avlad mamzer. Whenever the bio, the intimacy, is prohibited by a negative command, the vlad, the child, is a mamzer. So, do we have, we said before that when we say the Vlad is a Mamzer, we're saying that there is no Tfisas Kiddushin. A Mamzer results only from a marriage where there would have been no Tfisas Kiddushin. So, according to Rabbi Yeshevov, Rabbi Kiva says all those kinds of marriages, there's no bonding by the fact that he says the child is a Mamzer. So what are we going to do with the pasuk above, which mentioned Oachas Snua, where there was a bonding because the pasuk said Ki Siena? Well, Ha Nicha LeRabbi Yeshevov Ilafuke Merusmoi Kasi Shapir. Things will work out okay, even according to Rabbi Yeshevov, if we say that Rabbi Yeshevov was coming as a focused attack on Rabbi Simoy. Rabbi Simoy suggested that there's an example of a negative command where there is a bonding, Almona L'Kohen Gadol, and Rabbi Yeshevov, according to this approach, was coming to dispel Rabbi Simoy and saying, no, even in Almona L'Kohen Gadol, there is no bonding. Namely, in all negative commands, marriages that are violations of negative commands, there is no bonding. Shapir means there is still, Shapir means things will work out, things are good, because we can set up the posuk of Kisiena, according to Rabbi Yeshevov, as a marriage that involved the violation of a positive command. We call that Chiyuvei Aseh. An example of Chiyuvei Aseh is the marriage prematurely to an Egyptian convert. An Egyptian convert, only at the third generation of Egyptian converts can the Egyptian marry into the Jewish people. Up till that point, the prohibition is called a positive command, because that's the way the Torah phrases it. It says the Torah says in the third generation, then they can enter the Jewish people, and therefore, prior to that, they cannot enter the Jewish people. That's the concept of a lav habo michlal aseh, as an aseh, that which is a negative command that's derived from a positive command, has the status of a positive command. So Rebbe Yeshevov was a surgical attack on Rebbe Simoy, where Rebbe Simoy spoke about negative commands with almona l'koyin gomel as being an exception. Rabbi Shevov says, no, Rabbi Akiva made all cases of negative commands mamzerus. But that still leaves open the possibility of a prohibited marriage, and there will be a bonding, because there's no mamzerus. What's the example? A chiyuv aseh, as we just illustrated, where a person from the rank and file of Jewish people marries a second generation Egyptian convert, or certainly a first generation Egyptian convert. The Gemara goes on. Eloi taima de nafshe komar vafilu chayve aseh. If Rebbe Yeshevov was attacking the presentation, not just a surgical approach to Rebbe Yeshevov, but he was a general criticizer of Rebbe Akiva. That's taima de nafshe, means he was reflecting his own opinion. Nafshe means himself, his own opinion of Rabbi Akiva, his own critique of Rabbi Akiva. So what's Rabbi Yeshevov's attitude or his description of Rabbi Akiva? That all sinful marriages, the Vlad, the child, would be a mamzer. And that means that even marriages that are a chiyuv aseh, that are violations of positive commands, the child will be a mamzer, but my mokim lo. How are we going to set up the pasuk of Kisiena, which says there is a bonding even though there's a forbidden marriage? What example do you have of a forbidden marriage that doesn't come under the category of a chiyuv lo saseh, a negative command, or a chiyuv aseh? The Gemara has an answer, because a single exception. The Torah says that a high priest must marry a virgin girl. Be'ula is a girl that's already experienced intimacy. So a girl who's experienced intimacy is forbidden to a kohen gadol. She's not an almona, she's not a grusha, she's a be'ula. She's simply a single girl, never been married, but experienced. She's non-virgin. Rebbe Akiva, as far as all of these different opinions are concerned, specifically Rebbe Yeshevov, Rebbe Akiva there would say that there is a marital bond, even though it's a forbidden marriage. It's also not a negative command. It's in the realm of a positive command. The Torah says to a kohen gadol, you shall marry, in the positive sense, a virgin. A be'ula is inferred that she's prohibited. And again, lav habo michlal aseh aseh, that which is inferred as a negative act derived from that which was stated explicitly as a positive command, has the status of a positive command. Umay shno, what is exceptional about this? Why over here will Rabbi Akiva acknowledge that there is tfisas kiddushin, even though it's a sinful marriage? Mishum dahavi le aseh shein shoveh bakol, because this is it's a positive command, the command to marry only a virgin. That's not shava b'kol, it's not applicable. Shava means literally it's not equal, it's not applicable equally to all. It's unique to the Kohen Gadol. And as a result of that, it's considered a very, say, low level or minor type offense, so light that even Rabbi Kiva would acknowledge that there is tfisas kiddushin, that there is a marital bond that takes hold. So we've explained the pasuk of ki sien elish tei noshim achas auva v'achas nua, according to the Rabbanon and according to Rabbi Akiva as well. The Gemara asks v'Rabbanon ademuki lo b'chayve lavin. Instead of setting up the pasuk of ki sien, as we saw before the brackets, as a reference to the marriage is prohibited by a negative command. Nukma v'chayve asay. Why not say that there is the bonding of a marital bond formed in a sinful marriage only when it comes to chayve asay, marriages that are prohibited by to the tune of a positive command, but all other negative commands would be learned from Yavoma Lashuk that there is no tfisas kiddushin. The Gemara answers. Notice we have a long answer marking. To suggest that the pasuk of lo kisyan elish shtei noshim achasuva v'achasnua as a reference to chayve asei, hani chayve asei b'may ninu, which women could be let's say the topic or the subject, more accurately the subject of that pasuk, ish shtehen mitzrios, if the man is married to two women and they're both Egyptian converts. Well, shtehen snuos, both of the wives are hateful, meaning disgusted by the Torah. The Torah says they're reprehensible. It's reprehensible to marry Egyptian converts prematurely, first or second generation. So how can the pasuk be described as achas ahuva when they're both converts? And he marries them prematurely. I achas mitzvus v'achas yisraelis. If you'll say that the pasuk is describing a man married to two women, one Egyptian convert and the other regular Jewish woman, but that can't be either because shtei noshim me'am echad boinon. The understanding of the pasuk is that the two women come from the same nation. I be'ula l'kain gadol. If you'll say that snua in the pasuk is a Kohen Gadol who married two women, one a virgin Jewish woman, and the other a non-virgin Jewish woman, both marrying a Kohen Gadol. Miksiv tiena l'kohen, does the pasuk indicate that we're talking about the marriage to a Kohen? Doesn't say, it says kisen elish. Therefore, Adam will say, default, we can't set up that pasuk of kisen elish de noshim as referring to chiyuve asay only, and then suggesting that chiyuve lav, according to Rabbanan, there would be no tfisas kiddushin. The Rebbe Akiva, who does, he says that ki sien elish in fact refers to the snua, there refers to the ba'ula l'kayin gadol. He says bal korchach shavke likra davi dochik umuke anafshe. He says, we're forced into this position. Why are we forced into this position? So let's take a look at Rashi, three lines from the bottom. Bal korchech, shavke lekro, David dochik, umoki anafshe, kevan de goli loch kro b'yavoma, de lo tafsi bo kiddushin. Once the Bosik reveals by Yavoma Lashuk, the Yavoma that marries while waiting for the Yavom, she instead marries some outsider. And there the Torah says, Lo siya ishes ameis achutza lishzar. There, Lo siya means there's no bonding. Ne lif me ne de chayve lavin, les bu kedushin. Rabbi Kiva feels that that becomes a precedent setter for all chiyuve lav, that there is no tfisas kedushin. Well, once you say that, that means the posuk v'chisieno al korchuch l'chayve asei komar. Now I'm forced to say that the achas snua in the pasuk of chisya liishtei noshim has to be referenced to the violation of a positive command. Okagon, dechado mitzris, And what's the case of that, where he has two wives, one is a mitzvah and one is Jewish, even though they're not two women from the same nation? This is what the Gemara says, that we have no choice. We have to set it up like that. Ula Rebbe Yeshevov, according to Rebbe Yeshevov, who says that even Chayvei Asei, there would be no bonding. Bivu'ula L'Kohen Gadol, I'll say that the Snua is the Bu'ula L'Kohen Gadol, even though the Pasuk does not say Tiena L'Kohen. We go back to the Gemara. V'chol mi she'ein lo olav v'chulei. The Mishnah described all those, for example, a shivcha, a heathen bondmaid, or a nochris, a heathen or a Gentile woman, where there's no tfisas kiddushin, not with this man, nor by any other Jewish man. So there we say that the Vlad, the offspring, is going to be like her. So we have two points to deal with, and that's what we've written in between the lines. One is that there's no tefisas kiddushin, and you see we've used a house marking to highlight first shivcha, and we have to deal with the two points that there's no tefisas kiddushin and that the Vlad, the offspring, is going to be like her. It'll be a slave. And the second house marking, you can see on the second line from the top of Amud Beis, the case of the Nochris. And these two points. So, and that's what we've written on the side of the Gemara under our Nosei / Mivne heading. The house marking highlights Shivcha and Nochris. Makoros number one, the Ein Kiddushin Toifsin Bohen. Sources that the marital bond between a Jewish man and either one of these, the Shivcha or the Nochris, there is no marriage. And number two, Vlada Kamosa. The child that results will take on her status. If it's a shivcha, so the child will be a slave, and if it's a nochris, the child will be a non-Jew. This is the Gemara that is the source for the topic that the Jewish people have confronted over the years, and certainly at the time that this recording is being made, the issue of intermarriage, of Jewish men marrying Gentile women, Christian women, Muslim women, non-Jewish women. The man who marries a woman like that, the child is a Gentile. He's not half Jewish, half Goy. He is 100% Gentile. And as far as halacha is concerned, it's not even considered his child. Biologically, okay, so he fathered the child, but in terms of Jewish law recognizing the child as being associated with the father, not at all. And even further than that, the people who think that converting the child will help in that sense, that is not true. When a child converts, he becomes like a newborn. He's not associated with the Jewish father that fathered him. What I said is we'll call strict, we'll say letter of the law. There are there are emotional ways of looking at things, and there are certain rabbinic areas of law that might state things somewhat differently, but as far as the principle is concerned, what we said is really what is. The Gemara, Shivcha Kenainis Minolan, if a Jewish man marries a heathen bondmaid, from where do we know that there's no bonding, there's no marital bond formed? Omar Rav Huna, Omar Kra, the Pasuk says, Shvu Lochem Poi Im HaChamor. Now that Pasuk was stated in the context of Avram Avinu, and he had a heathen slave, and the slave is referred to in the Pasuk by the term chamor, a donkey. Am hadoyme lechamor. The heathen slave is compared to a donkey. Now, for those who are very sensitive to what call political correctness of this, that, or the other thing, the Pasuk in this drasha is not meant as an insult. After all, a donkey is a very useful creature, and it serves many important purposes. But one thing is for sure, that the concept of a marital bond with a donkey is non-existent. There's no marital bond that's formed with an animal, and likewise any peoples that are compared to the animal, likewise there is no marital bond. Ashkechon delo tafsi bo kiddushi. We've seen then, we've discovered that point, that there's no marital bond between a Jewish man and a heathen bondmaid. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Vlada kemoisa minolan, identifying the offspring as being associated with her, the heathen bondmaid. From where do we know that? Diomakra, the Pasuk says, when a man works as an Eved Ivri, as a Jewish servant, the Torah says that his master gives him a heathen bondmaid. And when the servitude period ends, the man, the Jewish servant, goes free. And what about the woman and the children she bore? It says, the Omar Kro, Ho Isha Vilodeo Tiela Doneha. The woman that was, and this is a heathen bondmaid that was impregnated by a Jewish man, the woman and the children belong to the master. In other words, the children are slaves. So you see that the identity of the child, when a Jewish man impregnates a heathen bondmaid, the identity of the children is like that of the mother, slaves. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, we have a new house, meaning Nochris, and we also have a long marking. Take note of the long marking, and call it Nochris L'Rebbe Shimon. Later on the page, the second half of the page, we have the issue of Nochris according to the Rabbonon. So we have two Tanaic, let's say, schools of thought, and their respective sources for these particular laws. On the side of the Gemara, under our Mivneh, the structural note, we have the following. Muvopo Mekuros Be'inyan Nochris. Sources will be presented here regarding the heathen woman. Aleph, Zion Amamim, a reference to the seven nations that inhabited the land of Israel when the Jewish people came into the land at the time of Yoshua. And Beis Sha'ar Umos, other nations of the world. Number one, Delo Tafsi Bo Kiddushin, that whether it be Zion Amim or Sha'ar Umos, those are heathen women, there's no marital bond formed with them. And number two, Vlada Kamosa, that the offspring is going to be a Gentile as well, even though the father is Jewish. Aleph, L'Rav Shimon ben Yochoi, the Dorish time of the crop. We're going to be looking at things as far as Rav Shimon ben Yochoi is concerned. Dorish time of the crop means that if you have a pasuk that does not have a stated reason in the scripture, Rav Shimon and his style of, let's say, his style of approach to verses is giving reasons for Torah teachings. If Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai on his own gives reasons for Torah teachings, what is he going to do when the pasuk itself gives a reason? As far as Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is concerned, there was no need for the pasuk to spell out a reason. I would have given the reason on my own. Why did the Torah have to bother spelling it out? It must be in order to include that which is beyond the immediate topic or the immediate example. So that's as far as Rav Shimon Yochai is concerned, that ordinarily is dirish time of the craw. When you have a pasuk that itself gives you time of the craw, what is that doing? What's the role of such a pasuk? And then we'll continue our discussion with the Rabbonan, the lo darshi time of the craw. According to the Rabbonan, they don't automatically give reasons to psukim. So when the pasuk spells out the reason, that reason was necessary for the immediate context in which it was spelled out. How would the Rabbanan know to include even beyond that context? According to Rav Shimon bar Yochai, The fact that I have a pasuk spelling out a reason is the green light for including beyond the immediate context. According to the Rabbanan, who don't have that luxury, what is their basis for going beyond the immediate context? And when we mention in this, in our rather obscure form, immediate context, we are referring to the seven nations. To discuss beyond the immediate context, we're then referring to women of the world. Jewish man marries Christian American. A Jewish man marries a Malaysian Muslim. Those are nations that are not included in the seven nations. How do we know that in those cases as well, there is no marital bond? And by the way, just as a side point, just for the, we'll say, our general listening audience, when we say there's no marital bond, there's no need for a, in halachic terms, I'm not talking here about secular legal authorities, but as far as Jewish law is concerned, a man who is quote-unquote married to a non-Jewish woman, she doesn't need a formal divorce from him. He can pick up and leave without any need for a formal divorce. A get is needed to sever a recognized marital bond. That which never took hold in the first place, there's no need to sever that which never bonded to begin with. Once again, I'm referring to points that are halachic nature. I'm not dealing with issues that concern secular authorities and laws in which laws that are pertinent to the land in which one lives. That's beyond the purview of the Talmud. We mentioned that we have a long marking entitled Nochrus L'Rabbi Shimon. The fact that we're dealing with Rabbi Shimon, his name will appear in a couple of lines, and the Gemara at the end of this very long marking, you can see at the end of the line, the Gemara says Honicha l'Rabbi Shimon, that all of this works out well according to Rabbi Shimon. Hence our long marking, indicating that the first section of this Omid, first half of the Omid, is dedicated to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Now the Gemara. Nochris Minolon. From where do we know that in the case of a Jewish man marrying a Gentile woman, there is no marital bond that's formed? Omar Kro Lo Sishatein Bom. The Pasuk says that there shall be no Chatuna, there shall be no marital bond with them. With the Gentiles. Now, just for the record, this pasuk is in the context of the seven nations that the Jewish people were commanded to eliminate upon their entrance to the land. Ashkachno delo tafsi bo kiddushin. So kiddushi. So this pasuk serves as a source for no marital bond. Vlado kemoisa, that the child born from a Jewish man wedded to a Gentile woman is a Gentile child. From where do we know that? Amar of Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Diomakro. The Pasuk says, once again, in this context, it says, Ki Yosir es bincho me'acharai. And here, diktuk, here grammar is of central importance. The word Yosir is in the masculine form. And it says, for he will lead your bincha, means your son, astray from off. Me'acharai means from following me, from following the path of Hashem. Now, what is the background to this pasuk then? It's again, it's the masculine form, and it's in the context of the warning not to marry the goyim, not to marry the Gentiles. So the pasuk is in effect saying the father, the man who is a Gentile, who weds a Jewish woman, will cause your Jewish son to go astray. In other words, the son that's born is Jewish. But the presence of the Gentile, of the Christian, or the Muslim, or the Buddhist father will have the effect of leading the Jewish child away from Judaism. So what is the pasuk saying? Bincha habo Yisrael is kori bincha. A child born from a Jewish woman who had wedded the Gentile man, but the child is called yours. He's called Jewish. V'ein bincha habo min oivedes kechavim kori bincha ela bino. The child born from a Gentile woman wedded to a Jewish man, that already is not called your child. That's called her child. At that point, the Torah isn't, we'll say, bothering to explain or to warn against intermarriage with them on the basis of the intermarriage, the Gentile part of the couple leading the child astray, leading the Jewish child astray, because in that case the child's not Jewish. So there's no, let's say, concern about that catastrophic result from happening, because it's not a Jewish child to begin with. The Torah's concern is only with a Jewish child being led astray. And that happens if you have a Gentile man marrying the Jewish woman. The Gentile man, the non-Jewish man, the Christian man will end up leading the Jewish child. And why is he Jewish? Because his mother is Jewish. Omar Ravina, Shmamina, we conclude from this. Ben Bitcha, Habo Min Ha'evet Kechavim, Kori Bincha. The son of your daughter, meaning a Jewish woman that wedded a Gentile man, is called your son. It's called Jewish. Your, meaning you, the Jews. You, your Jewish son. Neima Kosova Ravina, shall we say that Ravina, by describing the child as Jewish and not Gentile, that Ravina is of the opinion that Oyvid Kechavim ve'eved habo abas Yisrael ha'vlad mamzer, that an idol worshiper, a Gentile, or a slave that has intimacy with a Jewish woman, the child is a mamzer, the child is illegitimate. In other words, you should know that the mamzer, in general, is a Jewish person. It's just, he just has the limitation that he cannot marry into the rank and file Jewish people. A Gentile person can convert to Judaism and, yes, be able to marry into the rank and file Jewish people. Let us look at Rashi together, trying to understand why does the Gemara suggest this, even though the Gemara is going to reject this in a minute. Why is the Gemara suggesting that Ravina, who says that a Gentile man who impregnates a Jewish woman, the child is called Jewish, why the thinking that you just take Ravina one step further and the child must be a mamzer? So Rashi says, just a couple lines down from here, the Torah is coming to tell us that we don't ascribe the child born to the Gentile father. If we would, have ended up saying who the child is a Gentile. And if he were to convert, he would be able to marry a Jewish person. Hello, Bosu Yisraeli Shadin Alei. Ravina, though, is saying that we consider the child when the Gentile is the father and the Jew is the mother. The child is literally sent following the mother, considered like the mother. V'kevon sheba avera nolad, and since he was born in sin, it's a sin for a Jewish woman to have intimacy and bear children with a Gentile man. And since the child was born in sin, havelei Yisrael posel, he's considered a disqualified Jew. Kishar nolodim b'mi shein olav kiddushin, like other cases of children born from parents that don't have a marital bond. The samasnis shemamzer, we've seen in the Mishnah already, where a child is born from a union where there is no marital bond. In other words, a marital bond could not have been formed. The child is a mamzer. That's the thinking. Now, we go back to the Gemara, and we reject this. Nehi de kosher lo have, granted that we don't consider the child born from a union of Gentile man and Jewish mother as being kosher, as being proper. Nevertheless, mamzer lo havi, he's not called a mamzer, he's not classified as a mamzer, posel mikri, he's called posel. Posel is a term that's it's a negative term, negative classification, but it doesn't have that extreme level of negativity to ban him from marrying into the rank and file Jewish population. We turn back, we continue with the Gemara. Hahu b'shiva goyim ksiv. The posuk of lo sishatein and ki yosir, the psukim that we saw quoted on the upper part of the page, are psukim that deal with the seven nations. Shar umois minolan. How do we know that these laws apply to other nations of the world? A Jewish woman marrying an American Christian, or a Jewish woman marrying a Malaysian Muslim, or a Chinese or a Japanese Buddhist. Omar Kraw, the pasuk says, "Ki yosir es bincha," the marriage to the Gentile man, to the American Christian. That posuk, ki yosir es bincha, he will lead your son, the Jewish child, astray. La rabbis kol hamasirim, is coming to include all those that are capable of leading astray, leading to a religion, to a lifestyle that's not Jewish. So we have this posuk, ki yosir es bincha, which the Gemara is viewing as a type of extra posuk. It's there. What's it there for? It's to include all the other nations. Well, to call this posuk ki yosir es bincha an extra tight posuk, and therefore it's here to go beyond the bounds of its context, honicha l'Rabbi Shimon, the dorish taima dekra. That approach works out well according to Rabbi Shimon, that in general, without the Torah building in a reason, will give a reason anyway. So if I would have given this reason anyway, don't marry a Gentile man, the warning again to Jewish women, do not marry Gentile men, on my own I would have said, because the Gentile man will lead your Jewish child astray. Why does the Torah spell it out, coming to include others? Now that analysis is in tune with Rabbi Shimon, that, as we said, would have on his own given a reason. Elo la Rabbonon mai taima, according to the Rabbonon approach, that don't give reasons for the mitzvahs. If the Torah gives a reason, so the Torah is giving the reason, and the Torah had to give the reason, but it's something that I would not have done on my own. So, according to the Rabbonon, where do I learn that there's no tfisis kedushin, and that the Vlad Kamoisa when it comes to the other nations, beyond the seven nations? Because as far as the Rabbonon are concerned, the psukim above were needed to teach me concerning the seven nations. So what about other nations? Omar Kraw, the pasuk says, and note that we're beginning here a long marking, the dinim of Nochris, according to the Rabbonon. The pasuk says, this pasuk is in the context of a soldier, a Jewish soldier in battle, chances upon a heathen woman, and he has the right to take her unto himself, to marry her. It says in that context, V'achar kein tovo eileh uv'alta. And afterwards, means after the procedures that the Torah spells out in how to deal with a captive woman, after those procedures, that we don't have to mention them right now, they're all spelled out in the Torah. Afterwards, he then comes upon her and marries her. Michlal de Meikoro lo tafsi bo kiddushin. From this, we can infer that prior to her conversion, she is not capable of forming with him a marital bond. Ashkechon delo tafsi bo kedushin. So with that, we have a source that there's no tfisas kedushin prior to the conversion. That while a Gentile, the Jewish man bonding with a Gentile woman, there is no marital bond form. Vlado kamoisu menol. And where do we learn that the child follows the mother? Omar Kro, the Pasuk says, Kisena Liish Vyoldu Lo. And we learn from this, Kol Hecha de Karinon Bay Kisena, wherever there is a marital bond, Karinon Bay Vyoldu Lo. Then we say that the child will be like the father. Vchol Hecha de Lo Karinon Bay Kisena, and wherever there is no marital bond, Lo Karina Bay, we all do lo, then it's not considered as if it's his children. So if you have a Jewish man marrying the Gentile woman, so there's no marital bond. We already proved that from the Pasuk V'acharei Kein Tovo Aleo Lato. So there's no marital bond. The children are not considered his. They're not considered Jewish children. He Hachi Shifchonaimli. If this approach to the verses is acceptable, then why not apply the same to the Shifcha? You notice we have an arrow which tells you to look back the previous arrow to the top line, and there the Gemara was giving a source for Vloda Kamoisa by Shifcha, and it gave the Pasuk of Ishav Yodel Tiela Danela. Why not use this as the source, that in the case of a Shifcha, which is compared to a Chamor, there's no marital bond, and therefore the children will not be considered yours. They're not considered the Jewish man's children. They're considered hers. They're considered slaves. So isn't this a good source? The Gemara says, in Hochinami, yes, this Drosha Kisena Leish Vyoldulo is a good source. Elo Isha Vyoldel Tila Danel Omali. So what am I now going to do with the original source? Again, at the top line, which we thought was the source for the children of a Shifcha being considered slaves, like the mother, a heathen bondmaid. Answer, Lichidisanya. I need the Pasuk Isha Vileda Tiel Ladana for the following teaching. We continue at the top of Daf Samach Tes. Ha'oimer Lishivchoso. A man says to his pregnant heathen bondmaid, Hareat Maschorin Viole Uvlodech Evet. I'm setting you free, but your child with whom you're pregnant will be my slave. The Tanakama says, Havlad Kamoisa. Divrei Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Tanakama is Rabbi Yossi Aglili, says that the child has her status. In other words, the child will be free. The child will not be a slave. V'chomam omrim dvarav kayom. And the chom say what he says remains. The mother is free. The child remains a slave. And now the source quotes a pasuk. It says Mishum shenemar. The mother and the children belong to the master. Now this pasuk parallels, we'll say, connects the mother with the offspring. If we would simply read this source in a straightforward fashion, the verse is being brought as a support to the immediate previous opinion, namely the Chachomim. Now, but the Chachomim made a split. They said a man who declares the woman free and the slave, the child, a slave, the Chachomim said his declaration works. The mother goes free, and that only the child remains as a slave. Where do you see an element of togetherness in this pasuk? In other words, where do you see in this pasuk a split between mother and children, which is in fact what the Chachomim's Shita is? So the Gemara asks, my Talmuda, how do you see in this pasuk the opinion of the Chachomim? So Omar Rava, Ad the Rebbe Yossi Aglili, the pasuk, Ha'isha V'Dal Tila Danel, is a pasuk brought to serve as the basis for Rabbi Yossi Haglili. Now we look at the Rashi on the second line from the top, Vloda Kamoha. According to Rabbi Yosef Glili, a man who declared the slave, heathen bondmaid, free, and the child a slave, the child will not be a slave. The child will go free. Mishuchor, kidiyolav v'seifa, as the end of the source says, shenemar isha v'ladel tiel adonel. And from this we learn, bizman shoisha ladonel, when the mother is to the master, meaning when the mother is enslaved, havlad sheteled ladonel, the child that's born is also to the master, is a slave. Ein ho'isha ladonel, if the mother is not a slave, because he declared her free, ein havlad ladonel. So the vlad is also not going to be a slave. It too is free. So the pasuk cited in the source, even though the simple reading of the source had the pasuk serving as a basis for the Chachamim, that's not so. The pasuk is really a throwback to Rabbi Yossi Haglili. Before we continue, let's just make it perfectly clear that when it comes to the issue of intermarriage, the Gentile man that marries the Jewish woman, the child is Jewish. And the Torah had stated its concern that the Gentile man, the Christian man, or the Buddhist man, or whatever, will lead the Jewish child astray. Contrary to the thinking of many people who think, well, the mother will say, well, I'll raise my mother, my child Jewish, the Torah has a great fear of that being successful. So the Torah is warning against intermarriage. However, when it's a Gentile man and a Jewish mother, the child is Jewish. The other way around, if it's a Gentile woman with a Jewish man, there the child isn't Jewish right at the get-go. The mother being Gentile, the child is Gentile. In Judaism, it's interesting to note that the most important element in identifying the child, the single most important element, is based on the mother. The mother occupies the limelight, has the central position of importance. Further definitions, once we establish Jewishness, then as far as establishing is the child a Kohen, a Levi, Israel, we call the subdivisions within Judaism, the Pasuk says, L'mishbechosim l'veisa v'isam, then the father's identity becomes the deciding factor. But it's interesting to note that when it comes to the most basic definition of, or the most basic identity decider, the woman has the central, or she's the only factor. I don't even want to say significant factor, because she's the exclusive factor in establishing the single most important element of defining identity. The Mishnah, Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Yecholim Mamzerim Litoya. This is a very surprising statement. Translated would have almost no meaning. But if we look in Rashi, Yecholim Mamzerim Litoya, Mamzerim, the illegitimate can purify themselves, redeem themselves, but it doesn't mean themselves. It's redeem themselves mipsul zarom, their offspring. Shaloyu b'neim Mamzerim. When it comes to the Torah and its description of a mamzer, the Torah says that a mamzer is a stain, a mark of shame that lasts to the end of generations. Rabbi Tarfon, though, has a recipe for mamzerus not continuing till the end of time. And how is that? Ketzad. Mamzer shenosa shivcha, a Mamzer. Now, we said earlier in our shir today that a mamzer is a Jewish person. He's just considered illegitimate, and he has he has marital restrictions. He can't marry rank and file Jewish people. So, a mamzer shenosa shivcha beno eved, a mamzer that bonds with a heathen bondmaid. So, we said just earlier in our shir that the child follows the mother. We said that we had a pasuk, Shvu lochem poi machamor, amadomer lachamor, and we saw Ha'isha v'yodeh al tiyah l'adonel. We saw also other psukim. We saw the later pasuk, Kisen el ish v'yoldulo. But when you have a bonding with a woman, that there's no marital bond form, so it's not called v'yoldulo. So the child is not a mamzer; the child is a slave. Oh, well, that actually has an advantage to it. Shichuro, that slave child that was born, once freed, Nimsa HaBen Ben Chorin, that child becomes a rank-and-file Jewish person, a regular Jewish person. And as such, he, the child, can marry into the Jewish people. Who's the father of the child? A mamzer. Rebbe Lezer Omer Areze Eved Mamzer. Rebbe Lezer says it's not going to work. The child has a double identity. He's a slave, but also a mamzer. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei, which is already obvious. Machlokes tanoim im mamzer michoim litoyer. We have a tanaic controversy whether the mamzerim have this possibility of their children being salvaged, saved from the taint of mamzerus. Ibayalaho. Rabbi Tarfon lechatchila komar o dievet komar. Rabbi Tarfon, in his statement in the Mishnah about the mamzer marrying a heathen bondmaid, is that a lechatchila suggestion, a first choice? Go right ahead and do it. We would tell him to do that. O dievet komar, or only post facto. If he did it, so then the solution exists, but it's not something we would tell him to do. Rashi says, L'chadchil komar, mamzer no se shivcha, that a mamzer marries a shivcha, dekosova dechiksiv, the posuk that says, lo ye kodesh, the posuk, we have a quoted, by the way, on the side, Dvarim perichov gimel posuk yudches, so look at what we've had, the entire posuk says, lo siya kadesha milos Yisrael, lo siya kadesh mi bnei Yisrael. The word kadesh and kadesha has to do with what we'll see here in the Rashi, it's intimacy, forbidden forms of intimacy, where a person behaves in a totally immoral fashion. So the posuk that says, lo ye kadesh, the warning against a man. Kodesh is the pasuk is there grammatically addressing men folk, that men folk are warned against illicit relations. Yisrael koshuk siv, the loba mamzer. It's a warning referring to Yisraelim, Jewish people that are kosher, not illegitimate. If that's the case, so then the warning against illicit relations don't apply to the mamzer. And when we speak about illicit relations, let's just review one point. We're not suggesting that every forbidden type of relation will be allowed, but relations that we would call kadeshus, that would be allowed. If you say that Rabbi Tarfon is on a lechatchila level, limiting the posuk of lo yeh kodesh to Yisrael kosher. Rashi goes on, O dievet komar, mamzer shenosa shivcha, in the past tense, post facto, a mamzer who happened to marry a shivcha, avo lechatchila lo yisah. But as a first choice, he shouldn't marry a shivcha, the whole Yisrael who. After all, the mamzer is Jewish, v'karinam bei lo yakodesh, and referring to him, the posuk applies. The reference of the posuk of lo yakodesh applies to him. The metargaminon, and here is where you see shivcha in the posuk, the targum, the Aramaic rendition of this posuk is, lo yisav gavra, mibnei Yisrael itza oma. A Jewish man shall not marry an itza woman. That's an oma. That's a bondmaid. Tishivcha harehi kebehema ubiyosel hefker kadeshus. The shivcha, the heathen bondmaid, is parallel to an animal. And again, This is not deprecatory. It's a description based on the pasuk of in God's Torah that the Almighty wrote, that the Shivcha is Am Hadoim El Chamor, and the nature of intimacy with regard to animals is Hefker and Kadeshus. It doesn't form animal intimacy. Does not animal intimacy is fine. It's wonderful. It just doesn't fit into any boundaries and constrictions. Hence, it's Hefker. It's not governed. It's not contained. It's loose, and that is the word Kadeshus is a reference to that looseness. So let's go back to the Gemara. The question was raised regarding Rabbi Tarfon, the mamzer with the shivcha, is that lechatchila or b'di'evet? Ta shma. So we continue. Omru lo the Rabbi Tarfon. In the discussion between Rabbi Tarfon and his colleagues, the following appears in a Tanaic source that the colleagues of Rabbi Tarfon said to him, Tiharto es hazachorim. You have solved the problem of the male mamzerim. V'lo tiharto es hanekevus. You didn't solve the problem of the female mamzeros. Ve'i amris l'chatchilo ko'omar. If Rabbi Tarfon represents a recommendation, a first choice, mamzeres nami tinsiv li'abdo, let the female mamzeres marry a slave. We look at Rashi, just a couple lines down from here. V'es hanekevus lo tiharta, ein derech isha liglois mimekeima levakish tachbulois linose beseser. Rashi, just before this, do you see Rashi tihartes as a chorim, just a couple lines up? Rashi says, you solve the problem for the male folk, for the male mamzerim, shiyechu l'mokum shein makirin, let the mamzer go to a place where he's not known, v'yomar, let him say, eved ani, I'm a slave. V'nose shivcha, v'ein moicha b'yodo, and he'll be able to marry a shivcha, a heathen bondmaid, and no one's going to protest. V'yes ha-nekevos lo tiharta, but you, Rabbi Tarfon, didn't solve the problem for the nekevos. Why not? It's not the way of women to wander away from their places and through trickery seek out the marriage with a slave, to marry surreptitiously. After all, people will protest. Rabbi Tarfon must have been speaking on the di'evid level, the post facto level. If the mamzer went and did what he did, so then that's the solution, that the child can be declared free. If Rabbi Tarfon represents a first choice and a preferred method, since there would be no protestations, then mamzeres nami tinsiv levet, why not have the female mamzeres marry as a first choice, have her marry a slave? The Gemara says there's no proof from this, from the way the colleagues reacted to Rabbi Tarfon, to show that he was only b'di'evet. In truth, and here we have to speak out between the lines, in truth, Rabbi Tarfon was l'chatchila, that a mamzer, male mamzer, marries a shivcha. However, the female mamzeres marrying the eved isn't going to produce any solution. Eved ain lo chayas. The children that an eved produces are not associated with him whatsoever. So that if you have a mamzeres that is impregnated by a heathen male, the child has no association with the father. We can't call the child like the father a slave. Rashi says eved kenani ain lo chayas. The word chayas from the word yichus, pedigree, eino misyache sacharoviv, he's not associated in a pedigree form, in a pedigree fashion with his father, dichtiv, im hachamor, am hadoim el hachamor, kebehemo, shein avlad koruch achreo, av, When it comes to an animal producing a child, we don't say that that's the child and that's the father. We in certain areas of halacha, in fact, we do say that, but there's a longer discussion in Maseches Chulin and Perak Oisei Vespino. But for our purposes, when it comes to an animal, the child isn't attached to its parent. Certainly not attached to its father, the one that fathered it. If the mamzeres marries the eved, it's not going to help at all. It's not going to impart onto the child any label that's associated with the father, i.e., the label of slave, because the father is simply not associated with the eved. Father is not associated with that which comes forth from him at all. Toshma. Here you see we have an inverted triangle, because the first triangle was trying to show that Rabbi Atarfon was only b'dieved. Here we're going to try to show that his suggestion is l'chatchila. The ushpezichne de Rabbi Simloi, the ushpezichne is the innkeeper where Rabbi Simloi used to visit as a guest, was hosted in this inn. Mamzer Havi, he was a mamzer. The owner of that inn that Rabbi Simloi frequented was a mamzer. The Omar lay, and Rabbi Simloi said to the innkeeper, "I akdimoscha, had I known you earlier," see, the word akdimoscha has the word kadam in it, kodem, earlier, before. "Had I known you earlier, before you married the woman that you married, Tahar sinu levincho, I would have had a way of purifying your son." And as you're a mamzer, but your son would not have to have been a mamzer. And what did Rabbi Simloi have in mind? He would have said, "You know, you're a mamzer. Go marry a shifcha. Go marry a heathen bondmaid, and your son would have been a slave. You could have freed him." And then he would have been able to marry a regular Jewish person. E amres bishlam lechatchila shapir. If you say that Rabbi Simloi, that Rabbi Tarfon's eitza of mamzer marrying a shivcha is a first choice shapir, then that's what Rabbi Simloi would have told the innkeeper. Elo yamres dieved. If, however, you say that Rabbi Tarfon was only speaking on a post facto level, then my new, what Eitza would Reb Simloi have given the innkeeper to solve the problem of Mamzeris? If Rabbi Tarfon is only post facto, as we saw earlier in the Rashi, the idea of a Mamzer marrying a Shivcha is really prohibited. Just if it was done, so then the child would be a slave and he could be declared freed. But you wouldn't give an Eitza that's an Esor, that's a prohibition, as a first choice. So if Rabbi Tarfon is only b'dieved, what is Rabbi Simloi saying to the innkeeper? What Eitza would he have given him? And bear in mind, the goal of the Eitza, of the counsel, of the advice, the goal is to have the son being a slave, enabling him to be freed and becoming a Jew, as that's the rule when a slave is free. So how otherwise could this innkeeper have had his son become free? Answer, Demansiv lei Eitza, Fiyomar lei Zil Gnov, Rabbi Simloi would have told him, you know, go and commit a theft, and Vizdab Evet Ivri, and as such, the court would have sold you. If you don't have the cash to pay the theft, the court sells you into servitude as an Eved Ivri, as a Jewish servant. And what does the Torah say about Jewish servants that the court sells? The Torah says that the master unto whom he sold in effect to the person from whom he stole, that owner gives him a shivcha kanais, gives him a heathen bondmaid, and children are produced, and the children are, like the mother, slaves. The Gemara asks, Ubishnei de Reb Simloi, Eved Ivri, Mihave. Can you even suggest this, that in the years of Reb Simloi, that the practice of Eved Ivri even existed? The Omar Mor, Ein Eved Ivri Noeg, Elo Bizman Shayovel Noeg. The laws governing Eved Ivri apply only when the laws of the Jubilee apply, the laws of Yovel. And since the first temple period, those laws were not applicable anymore because of details that governed the application of the laws of Yovel. They simply were not the circumstances for those laws to apply were no longer extant during the historical period in which Rebbe Simloi lived. Rebbe Simloi lived after the destruction of the Second Temple altogether. So what kind of idea is this that Rebbe Simloi would have told him to steal and be sold as an Eved Ivri? Elolav, Shma Mino, Rebbe Tarfon, L'chadchila Komar, Shma Mino. So rather, Rebbe Simloi must have been telling him, L'chadchila, you are a mamzer, go marry a shivcha keninus. Go marry a heathen bondmaid based on Rebbe Tarfon. So you see that Rebbe Tarfon was lechatchila a preferred or first choice method for mamzerim. Shma mina. So this is conclusive. Om Rav Yudah Mar Shmuel halacha kerebbe Tarfon. And here you have the Gemara ruling like Rebbe Tarfon. What is beyond the scope of Gemara markings, but something that you would want very much to investigate, being that unfortunately the phenomenon of Mamzerus exists unfortunately it's not an isolated problem, it's somewhat widespread. Is there a solution for these Mamzerim that their children would have the option of marrying into the rank and file of the Jewish people? Let's continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Lezer Omer Hare Ze Eved Mamzer. Omer Rabbi Lezer. Rabbi Lezer is an Amora, and he says, my time at Rabbi Lezer. What's the basis for Rabbi Lezer that says that a Mamzer marrying a Shivcha will not be a solution because the child will have the label of the father as well? Yomar Kro. The Pasuk says Loi. The Pasuk in the case of Mamzer says Lo Yovoi Loi, that the Mamzer shall not enter the Jewish people. And that word Lo, Haloch Achar Psulo, that it's Psul, that which is renders him unfit, the disqualifying factor continues, it follows him. Rashi says toward the end of the, if you look third line under the Gemara text, you see Lo Yavoi Loi Dor Acharov Hu Moshech. The Mamzerus of the father draws together with him the next generation. The Ochi Mashma, the Pasuk says Dor Asiri Lo Yava Afilu Ein Bo Tzad Mamzerus Elo Meoso. Even if the source of the Mamzerus is the father alone, it remains. The Gemara. Back to the Gemara continues. The Rabbonon. The Rabbonon who don't agree with Rebbe Lazar. Hahu, the Pasuk of Lo Yovo Lo, Hahu be Israel Shenosa Mamzeres. That's the reference to a Jewish man that married a female Mamzeres. Salka Daita Chamina, without the Pasuk of Lo Yavoi Loi, I would have thought, the Mishpachosom Leves Avoisom Ksiv, also Loi Afke, the Pasuk says that identity is based on the father. So if you have a Jewish man marrying a Mamzeres, I would have thought that the child is like the father and is a regular Jew. Comes along the word Loi and says, not so. The Lo undoes what I would have thought otherwise, and that the child, even though the father is a Yisrael, the child will be labeled a Mamzer. But according to the Rabbonon, the case of a Mamzer marrying a Shivcha is not the subject of this Pasuk. For Rabbi Elazar, Reb Elazar's response is, Lav afagav de kosav lemishbechosim beveis avoisam, is it not so? That even though the pasuk suggests following the father, also loyafke, the word lo comes and undoes that and says you don't follow the father, and the child will be a mamzer, hochanami afagav dechsiv, even though the pasuk says by a shivcha, it says, hoisha v'yodea tiel adoneo, which suggested that the child would be like the mother, be a slave. Also, lo yafke, the word lo in the context of mamzerus, undoes that and says that the mamzer status, the stain of mamzerus, remains, even though you're dealing with a shivcha kaninus. Verabonon, Kol Vlad b'mei a shivcha kaninus, when you're dealing with the child that's conceived by a heathen bondmaid, kivlad b'mei behema domi, it's considered like an embryo in the womb of an animal. And as such, just like in the case of an animal, there's no association, there's no yichus with the father. The father may have impregnated the female animal, but that's it. There's no association with the father. Same thing with a shivcha that bears a child. There is no association with the father, and therefore a mamzer that impregnates a shivcha, the child is an eved, like the mother, a bondmaid, a male form, a slave, and that has a solution. He can be freed and thereby become a rank and file member of the Jewish people and marry a Jewish person. As you can see with this, we've been zoche to finish the third perek of Kiddushin. And before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.